Today is October 1st here in Munich, and we read this verse yesterday. So, but we'll go over it again because some of you were not here yesterday. This is 7th Canto, Chapter 5, Text 12. And we're meditating yesterday, today, and tomorrow about how to create a culture of appreciation. So here, Prahlad Maharaj is saying, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with the living entity because of his devotional service, one becomes a pandit and does not make distinctions between enemies, friends, and himself. Intelligently, he then thinks, every one of us is an eternal servant of God, and therefore we are not different from one another. I'm just reading a little part of the purport. It's a long purport. Everyone should be friendly for the service of the Lord. Everyone should praise another's service to the Lord and not be proud of his own service. This is the way of Vaishnav thinking, Vaikuntha thinking. There may be rivalries and apparent competition between servants in performing service, but in the Vaikuntha planets, the service of another servant is appreciated, not condemned. This is Vaikuntha competition. There is no question of enmity between servants. Everyone should be allowed to render service to the Lord to the best of his ability, and everyone should appreciate the service of others. Such are the activities of Vaikuntha. Since everyone is a servant, everyone is on the same platform and is allowed to serve the Lord according to his ability. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarvasya Jaham Riti Sannivisto Matasmati Yoganam Apohanam Cha. The Lord is situated in everyone's heart, giving dictation according to the attitude of the servant. Okay, I'm not going to read further than that. So here Prabhupada is making the point that in the spiritual world, which is our actual home, everyone is doing what? Everyone is doing service. And how does everyone feel about everyone else's service? He's happy about it. Not only happy, but what? He's appreciative. Appreciative. So every devotee in the spiritual world is showing appreciation for the service of all of the other devotees, and is encouraging everyone to serve according to their ability. Do all of you understand English enough to? You're not sure. There's a translator here. If you'd like to move over here for the translator, if you don't know English, please come and sit. It's more important that you sit by the translator than that you sit with the ladies. So please sit by the translator. Thank you. Anybody else? Is there anyone else that needs to sit by? Thank you for being willing to translate. Anybody else that needs translation? So yesterday we were speaking about how we don't really belong to this world, that we're a soul, that we belong to the spiritual world, that we're different from these bodies, and that one reason that we're looking, or one problem with this tea, is it going to make me sneeze? It's very strong. It helps. I've got a bad cold, I'm sorry, and it's helping my cold, but it makes me want to sneeze. So should we have the mic turned on? There's nobody in the kitchen. All right. So because we're a soul, because we're not this body, when we're in this material world, we're always looking for our home. We're trying to recreate the situation that's in our home, in the spiritual world. So we're looking to live forever, right? Nobody wants to die. And not only do we want to live forever, we want to live forever in a young, healthy body. It's not that we want to live together forever like, you know, a 90-year-old person in a wheelchair. But we want to be, you know, 16 or 20 forever. And we want happiness that doesn't end. We want great knowledge. We want really nice relationships where we can be completely ourselves and yet completely in harmony with the other person at the same time. So those things don't happen much in this world. And nobody lives forever in a young, healthy body. Nobody has happiness that exists forever. I was saying yesterday how a few days ago in Russia, they gave me this sweet rice, this rice pudding. So good. You know, but after I finished it, it was over. I can't taste it anymore. So in this world, our happiness ends, our life ends, our knowledge is limited, our relationships are full of misunderstandings, right, and hard feelings. And one of the things that we're looking for is what Prabhupada has described here. We're looking for a world where everybody is appreciating everybody else. Now, sometimes people think that this desire for appreciation is something that should be given up. It's something material. But you cannot give this up any more than you can give up your need for air or food. It's actually a part of the soul. It's the environment that we live in. It's our home. It's our home environment. We're meant to be breathing in an environment of general appreciation. All right. Now, in this world, people are generally not appreciative. We all have this experience that we'll work very, very hard and give our heart and soul to something, and no one even notices. Or people just criticize. Right? People may say, well, of course you did that. You're supposed to do that. It's your job. Isn't it? And sometimes we do something insignificant and then everybody's praising us. And it's very frustrating. So we also talked about this yesterday. I'm doing a little review since most of you were not here yesterday. So another principle you find out in the spiritual world is that people are not so much proud of their own service, but they're giving appreciation to others. Now, if everybody appreciates everybody, then everybody also gets appreciation, don't they? Right? I don't have to look for people to appreciate me if I'm in a society where every living entity is appreciating every other living entity. And in the spiritual world, this happens not only among the beings that have a human-like form, but even the flowers appreciate the other flowers. The birds are appreciating the bees. And generally, you think that the birds singing is more beautiful than the singing of the bees. But the birds even remain silent to let the bees sing. I was just reading a commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on the 10th canto. And he was saying that one time Krishna was playing his flute. This is chapter 35, text 8 to 11. And he didn't know what note to play. He was thinking, what note should I play on my flute? And then the bees around him started buzzing a particular note. And he said, yes, I'll play that one. And he started to play that note. Right? So this is the principle of universal reality, is that whatever you give out is what you're going to get. In the spiritual world, everyone is giving out gratitude, appreciation, encouragement, and therefore everyone is getting it. And you'll find that the laws in the scriptures for this world don't talk about rights, they talk about duties. In modern society, we're very concerned about rights. But if everybody does their duty, then everybody gets their rights. Okay? If you instruct everyone to do their duty, automatically all of the rights are taken care of. You don't need to even think about it. And the way that the law of karma works is that whatever we give to others is what we get back. Which means that whatever I'm getting, I must be giving to others. Now, this is a very difficult principle to accept. It's a very easy thing to say, but it's a very, very difficult thing to accept. To look at my life and say, the reason that people are treating me without gratitude or appreciation or any sort of acknowledgement is because maybe I'm not giving that to other people. But, my dear friends, I would suggest that you at least consider this. That the way I'm being treated is the way I'm treating others. Often, I'm not really aware of how other people are experiencing my behavior. You know, our consciousness is very much centered in ourself. And I may not really stop and think, are other people experiencing that I have gratitude and appreciation for what they're doing? Do they feel appreciated? When I was a very new teacher, the GBC who was in charge of our center visited the school and said to me, "Urmila, I know you love the children, but make sure the children know that you love them." And we often find this in relationships. A person will say, "Yes, I love my wife, or I love my children." But if you ask the wife, "Does your husband show love for you?" she'll say no. Or not very much, or not very often. So we may think, "Yes, I'm showing appreciation and gratitude. I show respect for other people." But I guarantee you that if you're feeling yourself that you're in a situation that nobody notices what you do and nobody cares what you do, that probably that's something that you're also giving out. So we're going to look a little bit about how to show appreciation for others. The real key here is forget about whether or not anybody appreciates you. Just forget about it. And work on showing appreciation for others. And do it as something that becomes almost like breathing. And if you do that, you'll end up bringing that energy back to yourself. Also, what will happen if you do that is you'll very much satisfy Krishna. Krishna will be very, very pleased with you because you'll be acting like a resident of the spiritual world. And when Krishna is satisfied with you, he will appreciate you. One reason that devotees are detached from whether or not other people in this world show appreciation and gratitude for them is they're getting so much appreciation and gratitude from Krishna. And how to do that? Show appreciation and gratitude for everybody else, including Krishna. So we can also talk about how to show appreciation for Krishna. Many times we have the mentality that, well, you know, I'm not going to show appreciation for you until you appreciate me first. And we see this very often, especially like if there's some conflict between people. People have the mentality, well, they've got to do it first. You know, they've got to fix themselves first, then I'll act properly. Try just acting properly first yourself, regardless of what the other person does. What other people do are, in one sense, not our business. That's between that person and God. I can't control others. I'm not responsible for others. So we should be putting out appreciation for Krishna himself, for God, and we should also appreciate all other living entities, especially the other devotees, but all living entities. Okay, how do we show appreciation? Let's talk about how both to show appreciation and how not to show appreciation. I gave the example yesterday that if I just go up to you and say, "You're really nice." No, if I say, "You're a really nice person," that probably doesn't make you feel very good, does it? Why? Why does that not work? Okay, but why is it that something general is not very satisfying? What's wrong with it? Okay. So the person who's listening to you isn't convinced that you're genuine. Right? Oh, this is what's making me so hot. If I just say, "You're very, very nice," you're not sure, do I really mean that? Why am I saying that? You think maybe I'm trying to manipulate you or I'm trying to flatter you. And also, your own mind will say, "Well, I'm not really so nice." So you don't believe that I mean it, and it's hard for you also to accept it. You'll think, "Well, I did something mean yesterday morning." You know, you start thinking of all the reasons why you're not nice. Isn't it? Don't you do that? Oh, you're a really good devotee, and you're thinking, if only they knew all these things I thought and whatever. And you really can't take it into your heart. So the way you do this is, first of all, you really watch the other person. You pay attention to what they're doing. You notice, what do they do? You can only give very specific appreciation if you're paying attention. You say to someone, "Oh, what preparation did you cook?" And then you can say, "Wow, this sabji has a lot. It has exactly the right amount of salt, and has enough ghee to have flavor, but not so much to be oily. You know, I can really tell you put a lot of attention into this preparation." Or, "I noticed that you come to do your duty of you're dressing the deities every, you know, third Sunday, and I notice you always show up in time, and I notice when you're finished, the deity's jewelry is very carefully arranged, and I see that everything's in order, and the way you put the flowers is very artistic. And the more you can specifically notice, the more, first of all, the other person will believe that you really mean what you're saying. And second of all, the more the other person will actually feel that what you're saying is true. And it will be encouraging and enlivening for them. Now, how often does anybody ever do this for you? You want to think about how often does somebody really notice the specific details of what you do and respond like that? You probably not very often. There's probably hardly anybody who does that. In fact, most of the things that we do, I find at least, nobody notices at all. They just don't notice at all. They're not even aware of it. And nor do I find that people even try to find out. You know, people aren't even interested. What's the basis of what you're doing? So wouldn't it be amazing if you started living your life like that? And your ability to really affect people and transform people in a very positive way, if you start noticing that kind of thing, is very, very dramatic. The more detailed you can be, the better. I was recently at a temple where there was a lot of fighting among the devotees. And one thing that I heard from every devotee is, I wish people would just be appreciative. So I took some time, and I started just listening to people. What are you doing? Tell me what's going on. And then I got everyone in a group, and I went around the group pretty much just repeating what I had heard. I said, it's so nice that you're coming and you're doing your service every day, even though you have a very serious disease and sometimes it's really hard for you to get out of bed and things like this. Or I noticed that you're in the kitchen every morning at 4:45 and that you went to the food bank and you got all this free milk and you got 300 gallons of free milk, even though it was something extra to do for your service. And you turned all of that into paneer, even though it took you so many hours. So that's, again, the kind of thing that you want to notice about people. Now, in order to notice that, you have to really be paying attention to people. And often we're so wrapped up in what we're doing that we don't do that. Isn't it? And think of the details of someone's service. You know, we sometimes praise people and say, oh, you've distributed so many books. But suppose we went into the real details. Suppose we said to them, you know, I notice that at least 4 days a week, you're getting out the door at 10 o'clock in the morning, and you're not coming back till 6 o'clock. And I've noticed that every day you're distributing at least 3 big books, and sometimes as much as 15. And you went out several times, even when it was really snowing out and it was very cold. Or you went out, you know, 2 days last week, you went out when you had no partners to go out with. And you came back and you were smiling, and you were really happy about it. So that level of detail. Do you hear people doing that very often? So you can try this as an experiment. And one thing that you'll find is that as you start observing people, first of all, you will start to genuinely appreciate them. It goes from just something that I'm saying because I'm supposed to say it. You know, it's socially. I'm supposed to say, oh, you did a good job in the cooking, or, sorry, I feel like sneezing. Or you did a good job on book distribution, or I really like the way you're running the temple, or something like that, or thank you for doing the accounting. It starts going to on a very, very deep level. You start thinking, wow, this person is really doing something wonderful. It changes your whole attitude towards the other person. And the other thing is that the other person will definitely accept it as genuine. I had one temple president say to me, I try to encourage the devotees and praise the devotees, but they never take it as genuine. I said, that's because you've got to be specific. You can't just say, oh, you're doing a great job. That doesn't work. It's got to be, you know, I noticed that you made 15 preps for the offering, and you made kofta balls, even though that takes about a half an hour, and the sauce was just the perfect consistency. It wasn't too thick, it wasn't too thin. Or I noticed that you washed all the floors and you really got in the corner and wow, you know, there's just no dirt on the floor. And you're doing it every day even though everybody isn't noticing. So something like that. By the way, if you're the kind of person who tends to be down on yourself, you can also do this for yourself. You can also start noticing specifically what you've done, because some people, you know, at the end of every day, they go, oh, I'm a failure, I didn't do this right, and I didn't do this right, and I didn't do this right, and I didn't do this right. Yes? Did you want to say something?
Once you were talking, I was thinking that appreciation is like salt or like spice. Can be too much also.
I think it's very hard to give too much if it's specific. Very, very difficult to give too much of a specific. If it's something you've really observed. Very, very difficult. I can't think of an example. Unless you just said exactly the same thing every day. You know? But then you're not really noticing. Just like I'm thinking of with the project that I've worked on, the reading books. So most of the work for the children's books is invisible. You know, we spent 6 months just going over what words could be introduced in what book. And it's the sort of thing you're thinking, nobody will ever even notice that we've done that. What to speak of showing appreciation for it. But if you also look around and think of, you know, who's stacking up the cushions, who's arranging the shoes, who's cleaning the floor, who's polishing the deity's paraphernalia. Just the fact that someone does it every day. And basically never taking anything for granted. Now, another interesting thing happens when you do this. The more you do this, the less you start caring about whether or not people appreciate you. It's sort of a magical thing. It's really very interesting. The more you start appreciating others, the more it no longer matters to you so much whether people appreciate you. It starts becoming irrelevant. And I really believe that one of the reasons is that Krishna is so happy with that kind of behavior that he fills your own heart with gratitude and you no longer need to get gratitude from others. Now, I found this so amazing that even when I teach the formula to people, that still people take it as genuine, because you can't do it without it being genuine. Yeah, sure. Now that can be enough. Just simply noticing what people do and being specific in your observation can be enough. People so rarely get that. It's such an unusual thing for people that they'll be so overwhelmed if you just do that. Well, I notice that you're spending 4 hours in the office every day and that you always make sure the accounts work out to the penny. And if they don't work out to the penny, you go through and you figure out where the mistake was, even if it takes you 2 or 3 hours. Just as somebody notices that. Or I notice that you're running a bhakti riksha program in your house, even though you have so many family responsibilities, and you're still doing it once a week, and you've expanded the number of groups. You've went from one group to 5 groups, and you're meeting with at least 10 people every time, and at least 3 of them have become devotees because of your effort. If you take it a step further, it's even more powerful. And the next step is talking about how you feel. So when I see that you're working in the office 4 days a week, and I see that you're always balancing the books even to the penny, and I see that if it doesn't work out right, you'll go through it again until it works out right. We have a translator over here if somebody needs a translator.
This is Hungarian.
Oh, that's Hungarian.
No, I mean,
what?
I tried to translate very easy German. Like, it's not.
Oh, because you don't know very. You don't know.
I don't know so many words, and I kind of know his vocabulary.
Oh, okay. So we need two translators. Very, very, very specific translation. Okay. So the next step is saying how you feel. You know, or I've noticed that you've been giving a 5 euro donation to the temple every week for the past year. That's okay, I don't mind children. I was a child, and I may be a child again. So I don't mind. As long as they're not screaming. So I noticed that you've been giving 5 euros every week, and you did it even when you went through a financial crisis. You know, you made a pledge to do it, and you followed through on it. So that's very specific noticing. It's okay. And then the next thing is, how do I feel? That really makes me feel, and try to avoid just good or happy. That makes me feel inspired. It makes me feel excited. It makes me feel grateful. It makes me feel joyful. As specific as you can get. And this has to mean that also you look inside, well, how does it make you feel? And then the final step that you can do is where you then give that person a vision of the future. Now, by the way, if you examine Srila Prabhupada's letters, and I have this all written down, but I didn't print it out. I also have this on a PowerPoint. But if you examine Srila Prabhupada's letters to the devotees, you'll find, I wouldn't say always, but you will find this pattern, that Prabhupada will say, you know, you have been organizing. Okay. I'd like to ask all of you, are you all right that a baby makes some baby noises, or is that driving you crazy? Is that all right?
For some time it's okay.
Yeah, usually people who have no children, they find it very irritating. And usually parents, they're already accustomed to this sort of thing as background noise, so it's not so disturbing. You wouldn't like it. It's very strong tea. But, you know, I've been working with children for so many years, and sometimes people say, you know, do the children want to become devotees when they're adults? And one of the points I make is that if from the time they're babies, if we're always saying, get out, 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 and then someday they get to be a teenager and they say, okay, I'll leave. So if we can possibly be welcoming and just sort of tune it out, that would be, and let the poor father just relax and just be happy. So the final thing is creating a vision. Oh, I was saying Prabhupada in his letters, he'll often say, I've noticed that you've done this Rath Yatra festival for so many years. I feel very inspired by your activities, and I believe that Krishna will bless you and you will go back to Godhead by this service. Or I believe that you will go on and increase the preaching. So that's the third step. The third step is then to give the person a vision. I noticed that even in the financial crisis, that even when you had difficulties in your business, you were still giving a 5 euro donation every week. And I feel really inspired that you did that, that you were able to keep up that obligation or that feeling of that vow that you made. Because so many times people make a vow, and then as soon as it becomes a little inconvenient, then they say, no, I'm not going to follow it anymore. I made that vow under such and such circumstance. It doesn't exist anymore. So I'm really inspired by the fact that you kept your promise. And I really believe that Krishna is going to shower his mercy on you for the fact that, you know, you've been so faithful to him. I'm sure that Krishna will be faithful to you. It's very important in this last step, when you talk about some vision for the person, that you make it specific enough so that it makes sense to that person, but general enough so that the person can find their own reality. In other words, I wouldn't say to you, well, I notice that you've been coming to the morning program every day for the last 5 years, even when you were sick, even when there was difficulty, and I believe that you're going to do that for the rest of your life, because maybe you won't. But I might say that I really feel that this fact that you've been so steady in your sadhana will really help you to conquer the modes of nature and get you the blessings of the Lord. So there's these three, there's actually four parts. The first part is noticing. The first part is paying attention. That means watching and listening to what people do. And because we're all hungry for appreciation, people will tell you what they want to be appreciated if you pay attention. They really will. They'll tell you what things they're working on. They'll tell you what's important to them. They'll tell you what, if you give them a chance, if you just talk to people and keep your mouth closed, you know, pretty much just say things like, what are you doing in your life? What's important to you? What's been happening in the last week? What's been happening the last month? They'll tell you, and they'll tell you the things that they want you to appreciate. It's really not that difficult. And then again, it's observing. So that's the first step, is paying enough attention to people so that you know what to appreciate. Then the next thing is saying that to them. and being as specific as possible, avoiding words such as nice, good, wonderful, you know, all those sort of adjectives. Just describe the behavior. Just describe the behavior. I notice that you're bringing, is that a girl? I notice you're bringing your daughter to the class, even though, how old is she? Nine months?
Nine months.
Even though she's only 9 months old, and you know that she's probably not going to behave, but still you're so eager to hear that you're bringing her, and you're undergoing a lot of austerity by watching her here. Wasn't that nice to hear that? Does anyone ever say that to you? It's wonderful to hear these sort of things. I often give the example when I used to go out and distribute books. You know, I'd get some award. They'd say, Urmila sold 600 Back to Godheads magazines. And everybody would say, Jai. And I'd get the maha plate. And then the next day, if I didn't go out, nobody ever said, Urmila changed 10 stooly nappies today. So you pay attention, then you say that, and then you say how you feel. So when I see this, I feel very excited because I know that the children of the society are the future of the movement, and that when parents are willing to undergo the austerity of bringing their child to the program, that child is much more likely to participate in the movement, and Krishna is likely to reciprocate with you for your austerity. Right? Did you hear how I had all of those things there? I was paying attention to what he's doing. I'm seeing how he's struggling. He's worried that people are going to criticize him and they're going to look at him and he has this anxiety, right? But still he's coming. So I'm noticing that. I say that. I say how it makes me feel, which is genuinely how it makes me feel. I really worry when I go to temples and I see there's no children in the programs. That's a dead place. There's no future. So I speak about how I feel and then I give him a vision for the future. This is not such a difficult thing to do, but it's something you have to practice. Now, I may have said this before, but whenever you're learning a new skill, and for most of us, appreciating others is a very new skill. Okay? We're all starving. We're all starving for appreciation, but we don't generally give it to anybody. And then, of course, we wonder why we're starving for it. And probably our parents and our society never really taught us how to be how to show our gratitude and appreciation for others. After all, we're in a material world where people's mentality is to criticize others. So at first this may seem very artificial. And people tend to say, well, I don't really want to do something unless it feels natural. So there's a resistance to it. I want it to just come naturally. But my dear friends, the problem is that there was a time when this was natural for us. There was a time when we were in the spiritual world and this mentality was as natural to us as breathing is to us at the present time. But now we've gotten into a bad habit. And what should be natural to us is no longer so. Just like always thinking about Krishna is our natural state. But now instead of always thinking about Krishna, I'm always thinking about my money or my clothes or my family or my car or my work or, you know, who's in the latest sports game or something like that. So I've developed an artificial way of life. And to get back to the natural life is going to take some practice. Now, the steps of learning anything, I don't know if I've taught this before in Munich or not, but there's four steps to learning anything. The first step is unconscious incompetence. I don't know if you can, how well you can translate this into German. Unconscious incompetence. So that means you're doing it wrong and you don't know you're doing it wrong. You're not even aware of it. We're going through our life hardly ever showing any kind of gratitude or appreciation for anybody and we don't even know it. We think I'm a nice person. Right? Why doesn't anyone appreciate me? So unconscious incompetence. The next stage is conscious incompetence. You start becoming aware. I hardly ever actually express any appreciation for anybody else. I'm so hurt that I don't get it, but I hardly ever give it. And when I do give it, It's not in a way that's very helpful. I just say, oh, you're such a sincere devotee. Or, oh, you're such a nice person. Or, oh, you're such a good person. And I start becoming aware, wait a minute, that's not a way that's going to be very helpful. Then the third step is conscious competence. So we have unconscious incompetence, conscious competence, then unconscious incompetence, conscious incompetence, then conscious competence, where I'm doing it right, but I have some formula I wrote down from Urmila's class. And I have to get out my paper. Where's my paper? I have to get out my paper and say, what are the steps? What am I supposed to do? And it feels very artificial. And then you come to unconscious competence, where it's just natural. It just becomes what you do. Now, everybody wants to skip those two middle steps. Everybody wants to go from unconscious incompetence to unconscious competence. But my dear friends, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen with driving a car. It doesn't happen with learning how to read. It doesn't happen with anything. It doesn't even happen with bhakti yoga. Right? First we're in illusion. We don't know we're in illusion. We just think we're normal. Then all of a sudden we realize, I'm in illusion. I'm suffering. Then you start being purposely a devotee. What am I supposed to do now? Okay, I'm supposed to offer obeisances. Oh, now I'm supposed to chant Hare Krishna. Right? Oh, I'm supposed to wash my hands. I'm supposed to do this. I'm supposed to say these prayers. So you're doing everything by the rules. And after a while, just be, oh yeah, I'm supposed to think about Krishna now. Then after a while, it becomes spontaneous. Now, I will guarantee you that this way I've told you of appreciation, there's no way you can do it so that it's not genuine. It's impossible. It may feel awkward to you, but even though it feels awkward, other people will be so grateful that you're paying attention to them and that you're noticing the details of what they're doing. Now, don't be afraid that if I do this, someone else will think it's insincere because I'm being a little awkward. Okay? So I'd like us to, we're going to also go a little bit about how to show this appreciation for Krishna. So I'd like us all right now, if it's possible, to think of someone in this room. It has to be someone that you know a little bit. Does everyone here know at least one other person in this room? That you know something about their life? I'm sorry, I can't talk very loud. They have a cold. And this mic is just sending sound to the kitchen. It's not amplifying anything in this room. So my voice is at about 1/10 the energy, isn't it? You know, I don't know if you know my usual energy quotient, but I'm down to about 1/10 of what I'm able to put out with my voice. Do all of you here know somebody else in this room? Is there anyone here who doesn't know anybody else in the room at all? Okay. We're going to practice this, and I'd like us to review what the steps are. The steps are to very specifically just tell somebody what you've noticed that they do. And just observable actions. It should be something you would notice with a camera and a microphone. Not your opinion about it, just the actions. Just... It's okay. It's nice that she's curious. That's good. You wouldn't want her to not be curious, then she'd be unintelligent. Right? Being curious is a good quality. So just something that someone does. Even I've noticed that every day for the last 3 years you've chanted 16 rounds. Or I notice every time I see you, you're wearing tilak. Right? Anything. Or, you know, the last time we had a festival, you cooked 5 of the preparations, or you were there greeting the guests, or you stayed there after the Sunday feast last week and cleaned up after everybody else went to sleep. Something very specific. No adjective. Not you're a nice person, not you're a good person, not you did a good job. Just describing what the person has done. That's all. Then the next step is saying how you feel about it. And again, try to get something besides good or happy. You know, gratified, excited, curious, thrilled, inspired, joyful, fired up. What else can we have? Thrilled, grateful, thankful, peaceful, hopeful,
amazed.
No, just positive. Shocked. You'll be a little careful. Also, you want to watch your tone of voice. You don't want to say things like, "I noticed you actually showed up for the last 5 days on time." That's not going to work, folks. Actually, one thing that I would teach my students is that in communication, 70% of communication is body language, 23% is tone of voice, and only 7% is the words. So we used to do a little experiment where you said no in all different tones of voice, like no, 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 no. Right? Or with body language, if I say, "Oh yeah, I'd really like to talk to you," and it would be, "Yeah, I'd like to meet with you today." Yeah, I think so. So you do want to watch the. This is totally off topic, but if you're in a situation where you can't see someone's body language, what you do is you imagine it, which is why it takes more concentration to speak to someone on the phone than in person. Because your brain is imagining the other person's body language. That's why they say it's dangerous to drive while you're speaking on the phone. And it's not dangerous to drive while you're talking to somebody in the seat next to you. You have to, in order to get the person's meaning, you have to focus much more. And you're imagining their body language. And that's why if you're reading something that's just writing, like we have this problem with emails especially, where people don't take a lot of time with them, when you're reading something that someone's written, your brain is imagining their body language and your brain is also imagining their tone of voice. And do keep that in mind. Because often what happens, we're not aware that our brain is doing this and we just assume that the body language and the tone of voice that we've imagined the other person is using is what they were actually using. And then we respond to something that was just our imagination. So do be careful about this. It's just an automatic thing. We automatically pretend. It's like we hear the person's voice in a tone of voice that we add. So that's just a little aside. It's sort of a little off topic as far as having good communications with others. Right? That's why the written communication can be such a source of miscommunication and misunderstanding. All right, so then you want to say how you feel. As I said, if you can even only just do the first part, that really, really touches people's hearts. Because it's so rare that people get that. And then, wow, when I see that, I feel really inspired, or I feel really moved, or I feel really touched, or I feel really enlivened, or I feel really hopeful. You know? And then I'm expecting that by doing this, by cleaning the floor like this every morning, that Krishna will be so pleased that he'll continue to clean your heart, just like this devotee here was cleaning the floor early in the morning, right? Everyone else is doing their sadhana, and he's cleaning the floor. So he's making some sacrifice. I assume he was cleaning the floor then because that's probably the only time when people aren't walking around the building. You know, if you try to clean the floor in the middle of the day, then it's very difficult because people are walking around. So you have to do it when people are not so active, right? Is that why you do it early in the morning? Also, if you do it in the middle of the day, then the floor is wet and people will complain about walking around with their socks on a wet floor. And also they'll make marks on the floor. So therefore he's doing it early in the morning. But in order to do it early in the morning, that means that you're having to either wake up really early to chant your rounds or you have to chant your rounds later in the day. Which do you do? Do you wake up early or do you chant later?
Yeah, I always try to chant before, but then it depends.
So you have some japa you end up having to do later in the day? Or you do it very early in the morning. Which do you do?
Well, I chant my rounds before I have to do the floor.
Before?
But sometimes I have time. That's when I wake up at 2:30, but sometimes when I wake up later, 3 or 3:30, then I have
then you have to chant later. Now, do you notice what I'm doing here? Do you notice what I'm doing here? Not only did I see he was cleaning the floor, I thought about it. And I thought about, what does that mean? What is he probably thinking? What is he probably feeling? What kind of sacrifices is he having to make in order to be cleaning the floor? It was about like 6 o'clock this morning, I think. Something like that, 6:30. You were cleaning. I put myself in the other person's shoes. And I think, if I were cleaning the floor at 6:30, why would I be cleaning the floor at 6:30? What would I have to do? So I not just say, thank you, Prabhu, for cleaning the floor. That's okay. But if I say, you know, I'm really impressed that you're doing that at a time so that you're not disturbing the other devotees. You're really trying to serve the devotees. And in order to serve the devotees, you're making some adjustment in your own sadhana. And when I see that you're doing that, I really feel inspired that I also want to try to serve the devotees like that and make some sacrifice like that. And I'm sure that by making that sacrifice, that Krishna will really benedict you. You know, I noticed also that you're very eager to ask questions and understand the philosophy. I'm sure that Krishna will award you with that knowledge that you're seeking because of doing that menial service. Okay, did you see that? Now, even though I'm doing this as a demonstration, it's also very genuine. Were you able to feel that I was saying that genuinely? It doesn't feel fake, does it? No. It feels very genuine. Even though, just see this, I'm doing this as a demonstration for all of you. Do you follow? I'm demonstrating it for all of you. It's almost impossible to do this without being genuine. Very difficult. Please don't worry that other people will think you're not genuine. It just will not happen. Okay. So hopefully we'll have a few minutes to practice it at the end. I want to go over now about how to show appreciation for Krishna. Well, it's really the same thing. Notice Krishna. Pay attention. What is Krishna doing? You can even start with, what is Krishna doing for me? Often we see what Krishna is not doing for me.
Big list.
As I said to one of my friends one time, I said, if you give somebody a present and they don't use it or they don't like it or they don't thank you for it, will you give them more? And she said, no, of course not. This happened to me actually not that long ago. I was helping somebody move into their house. And I had given this person several gifts one time of some saris and some gold jewelry that I wasn't using anymore. And I found that it was very good quality gold jewelry. It was just lying on the floor, covered with dust. And I made a determination. I didn't say anything to this lady, but I made a determination. I thought, I'm never going to give this woman a gift ever again. Not never. I thought, if they're going to take gold jewelry and let it just lie on in the corner in the dust, why should I give them any other gift? So, you know, Krishna's like that too. He's also a person. Prabhupada says he has all the propensities of an ordinary human being. So we can also think, what is Krishna doing for me? Now, I know this is a little hard to accept, but all of us in this material world are criminals. Again, we don't think that way. We think we're very nice, wonderful people. And we think that now I'm worshiping Krishna, so I'm really a nice, wonderful person. But we're all criminals. We've all rebelled against the laws of the universe. We've tried to set ourselves up as God. We've caused so much pain to so many living entities, most of which we have no idea at all, most of which we're just unconscious about. Now, most governments don't treat their criminals very nicely. Right? They give them just the bare necessities with which to live. I was talking to someone once who was in jail waiting for trial. And he told me they only let you bathe every 3 days. Right? And in jail, they don't give you very nice food. They give you just enough to live. They don't give you very nice clothes. They don't give you a very nice bed. They don't give you a very nice toilet. Nothing is very nice. They don't put pictures on the wall. They don't give you flowers. Can you imagine some government putting fresh flowers in all of the prison cells every day? Okay. But what does Krishna give us in this world? Yes, there's a lot of suffering here, which we certainly have brought on ourselves by our karma. Krishna's given us flowers. You don't need to have flowers. Many plants can be produced without beautiful and scented flowers. Beautiful and fragrant flowers are not necessary for the world to go on. But yet Krishna's given us flowers. Krishna's given us sunrises and sunsets. Look at the variety of food that Krishna has given us. We could all live just on rice and beans. Right? And only one kind of bean, probably. You know, how many kinds of beans are there? Hundreds. So many different kinds of rice, different kinds of wheat, different kinds of vegetables. Next time you eat, think of the fact that every vegetable has its own particular taste. You could be blindfolded and you could say, oh, this is broccoli, this is zucchini, right? This is pumpkin. Even there's a little different taste between pumpkin and butternut squash and acorn squash. Each has its different taste and its different flavor. It's not necessary for life, is it? What to speak of when you become a devotee of Krishna. Look at the nice food that we eat. We devotees of Krishna eat food as good as any king. How many people are eating fresh, especially today, people are just eating canned things and frozen things, and we're eating all fresh food cooked in ghee. Who's eating this? And then at least this temple doesn't have a lot of garlands, but most of our temples, the devotees are wearing garlands all the time. Even that we have flowers. I remember when my father first visited the temple, he was astonished at all of the fresh flowers. Generally in the world, only very wealthy people have flowers regularly in their house. What to speak of wearing a necklace of flowers? And I'm sure all of us in the Hare Krishna movement have worn a garland of flowers. Right? I mean, so many wonderful things that Krishna has given us, even though we're criminals. Or just in our own lives. I'm sure all of us have more clothes than we need just to live. We probably have more space than we need just to live. We have more nicer food than we need just to live. Be appreciative. So the next time you're eating something, you can appreciate all of these wonderful flavors, all the wonderful texture of the food that I'm eating. This is Krishna's gift. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati explains in his purport to Brahma Samhita, text 61, that someone who lives like this is sure to become fully Krishna conscious. Someone who sees everything as the Lord's mercy actually is grateful for the gifts that Krishna's given. So you can start with that. Then you can also start appreciating. I mean, Krishna wants that. Just like the person who did this embroidery. Do you know who did this embroidery? Any idea? Anyway, I'm sure the person who did this embroidery wanted people to admire it. I had a very interesting experience in London about a year ago that I was invited to the home of this one family for prasadam. And the husband was saying how he was very expert at doing layout. Do you all know what layout is? Do you all know what layout is? You take like a book and you put the print and the pictures in certain places. Now, if any of you do layout on the computer, most layout programs, it's visual. You have boxes, and you put the text and the illustrations in boxes, and then you arrange them. But underneath that is a computer program. Right? And the way that he did layout is by using the computer program. I think it was called LaTeX. He said it was the underlying program underneath all of the different layout programs. Am I making sense to all of you? Are you understanding what I'm saying? So he invited myself and the other people I was with to come see his layout work. But when we looked at his computer, it was just a bunch of computer code. Now it starts to be annoying. Oh, now it's annoying. Okay, so don't let her play with that toy. Yeah, okay, thank you. So we just looked at the screen, and it was just computer code. Have you all seen computer code? Have anybody seen computer code? You're a programmer. So it's just, it's like a foreign language. It's something like a mathematical and foreign language. So we were just looking at the screen and seeing these lines of computer language. And he's saying, here's my layout that I'm working on. I said, oh, that's very interesting. So Krishna also wants us to appreciate what he's doing. What I learned from that is everybody wants what they're doing to be appreciated. Everybody. You read about Krishna in Vrindavan. He looks around Vrindavan. He's thinking, how wonderful my energy is. So just to be appreciative. Wow, Krishna is such an artist. Creating the trees and the sunrise and the sunset and the movements of the planets. How clever he is. What do you speak of appreciating Krishna's personal qualities? How beautiful he is, how nicely he dresses, how expertly he kills the demons, how beautifully he plays his flute. But at least anybody can appreciate Krishna's artistry and intelligence and creativity in the material world. It's not that difficult to do, but it's a question of paying attention, of noticing things. Krishna is giving us lists in the Bhagavad Gita, right? 7th chapter, 9th chapter, 10th chapter, 15th chapter, how to appreciate him in the world. Just even if we don't have any appreciation for Krishna, the person in Goloka Vrindavan. So this is also something you can practice. Wow, how expertly Krishna's done this, how kind Krishna is to do this. When I see this, when I hear this, I feel very, how do I feel? I feel inspired, I feel happy, I feel grateful. Right? I was just recently at a festival in Russia at the Azov Sea. And on a sunny day when the wind is blowing the water and the sun is shining on the water, you see this sparkling. It looks almost like diamonds dancing on the water. Yeah, now you probably have to go out. I'm so sorry. So then one can think that Krishna is such a master artist that just by the interactions of wind and water and the sun, he's creating something that looks like these sparkling diamonds. And people come from all over the world to go to these sort of places just to watch the sun sparkle on the water. And one can think about, well, Krishna's garments are also sparkling and Krishna's form is also sparkling. We read about how Krishna's jewels are reflecting off his mirror-like cheeks and creating highlights in his curly hair. So those are the ways in which we can appreciate Krishna. And then when we appreciate Krishna, then we will feel Krishna's appreciation of ourselves. I had one devotee ask me about a year ago, can't I ask for any reciprocation from Krishna? Of course. We all want reciprocation from Krishna. But one should again ask, what am I giving? To what extent am I expressing gratitude and appreciation to Krishna? A higher platform, of course, is expressing appreciation to Krishna for the things that seem difficult and painful and troublesome. That's even a higher platform. That when those things happen, saying, thank you, dear Lord, for purifying me. Thank you, Lord, for breaking my attachments. Thank you for bringing me closer to you. Thank you for allowing me to pay off my karmic debts so that I can be free of this world. Some kind of gratitude, even for the difficult things. If you live like this, you will feel very satisfied. First of all, if you live like this, because you get back what you give out, people will start appreciating you. This I promise you. It's the way the universe is designed. And second of all, even if they don't, you'll feel very, very satisfied. You'll no longer need to be dependent on worldly appreciation in order to meet your spiritual need. We have a spiritual need for appreciation. This is not a material thing. It comes, as we were reading about, from Vaikuntha. That comes, that's the atmosphere in which we live. It's just like all of us have bodies that are designed to breathe air and to eat food. So we as a soul, our soul is designed to be breathing in appreciation. And we will get that need satisfied if we appreciate Krishna and we appreciate all other living entities, even if they don't give it back to us externally. We'll get that reciprocation from Krishna. It's not something magical. It's not something that's just going to fall on you. I'm going to just go on being an ordinary person and one day I'm just going to feel filled up with Krishna. It's if I give it out, I will get it back. And then the times when people are ungrateful and the times when people are critical will be much easier to take. You'll look at it and you'll just think, this poor unfortunate person doesn't know how to live in a spiritual atmosphere. You'll feel compassion for the person instead of feeling so much pain yourself. Your personal pain will decrease. Okay, we are going to try to do a little practice. Tomorrow, if you had a mic that could amplify my voice in this room, it would be really helpful to me with this cult, because I'm pushing maximum energy and I'm only getting out 1/10 of my volume. And it's frustrating for me that I can't push it. The body just isn't responding with this cult. Just can't. The machine's a little broken. So I need some technological help. Yeah. No, now it's done. But for tomorrow at least, please, because it's.
I have a question.
I just want to give coming attractions. So my plan tomorrow, Krishna willing, if I can speak, is that tomorrow we're going to look at the negative. Tomorrow we're going to look at the tendency to criticize. And specifically we're going to be looking at Rupa Goswami, who says that the Uttama Adhikari is understood as being free from the propensity to criticize others. So not only not criticizing, but the tendency to criticize others. And this is, once you get to the conscious incompetence platform with this, it's quite painful to notice how much we criticize people. And I know my godbrother Burajan Prabhu talked about how one time he took a vow that he would never criticize anyone, and he wasn't able to keep it for 2 hours. So I became very inspired by hearing about this. This was at Kartik about 3 years ago, and I decided that I was going to try to take the same vow. So I said, okay, I'm going to take a vow that I won't criticize others. And what happened was I moved from the unconscious incompetence to the conscious incompetence platform. All of a sudden, Krishna in my heart started letting me know every time I was being critical. And I was overwhelmed. I was completely overwhelmed. I realized that I was feeling critical of somebody else practically like 20 times a day, sometimes 20 times an hour, that it was often my immediate reaction. That practically as soon as I would see somebody or hear somebody or see anything, just the instant reaction was to find some fault in that person or that situation. And I felt really overwhelmed, and I said, Krishna, I can't do this, I can't handle it. You know, I'll wait and take this vow another time. I couldn't do it. I was really, really overwhelmed by it. So it's a very, very, very difficult thing to deal with. And this tendency, this propensity to criticize others, and the tendency not to be appreciative of others, when we look at these things, we're really touching the root of our material contamination. We're really touching the essence of why we're in illusion and why we're not pure devotees. This is the real heart of the matter. So we'll look at that. We looked at the positive. Yesterday we looked at more general philosophy. Today we looked at the specifics of the positive. I hope you've all been able... Have you been able to hear me? Okay. Thank you, Krishna. And tomorrow... Thank you, Krishna. And tomorrow we'll look at the negative, and we'll look at some of the specifics of the negative. And I'll be very frank with you that I'm not nearly as good at getting rid of the negative as I have been at working on the positive. And I'll be very happy to get any advice and help from all of you in that. It's one of my biggest embarrassments before Krishna, this tendency that I have to just immediately try to find fault with people. It's It's really quite astonishing to me how deep-rooted this is, that I always want to think that I'm better than everybody else. You know, it's quite amazing. Okay, so I do want to try to have some either some practice time here or some determination for practice, but I'll take questions for a few minutes. Yes, sir.
It was very inspiring to hear you give these points, Mataji. You shared definitely that we should appreciate Krishna in context with the nature and what he has given us. How can we also develop this appreciation for the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra which is given to us, connecting him directly, because it's next thing which brings us to him directly.
How the Hare Krishna Mantra is available in any circumstance. You can even be in a cave, you know, underground, in the darkness, where you can't see anything of nature, and you can still have the Hare Krishna Mantra. You can have the Hare Krishna Mantra in your mind, even if you're in great sickness. It's a way that Krishna is connecting with you in all circumstances. Everything else, you know, you may have it, you may not have it. Like the devotees in Russia, in the former Soviet Union, they were put into labor camps in Siberia for distributing books. And they had no prasadam, they had no devotees, they had no books, they had no kirtan, they had no deities. Their association was criminals. Not only did they not have devotee association, they didn't just have to associate with people at an office or at a university. They were associating with rapists and murderers. And if they were caught chanting, they'd be beaten pretty bad. But they still had the holy name. They still had the holy name. Somebody was asking me a few days ago, you know, if I have children, I can't chant 16 rounds anymore. I said, those people in the labor camps, they were chanting 16 rounds. And I was realizing that they weren't even initiated. They hadn't even taken a vow to chant 16 rounds. And still they were chanting 16 rounds. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that of all the forms of the Lord, the holy name is the most kind. The Lord in the form of his name is very, very kind. And it's also wonderful that when we're, especially in kirtan, you know, that singing the holy name is also even very pleasing to the senses. The instruments and the singing and the dancing. I mean, that's one of the key ways that people try to enjoy materially is by singing and dancing to beautiful music. And Krishna's allowed us to have that as our main form of spiritual purification. I mean, if people are going to have a party, what do people do when they party?
They sing and dance.
They sing and dance. And they eat good food. Right? So Krishna has allowed us a process of spiritual purification that's just like a party. That's pretty amazing. I mean, if you think about so many other religions and spiritual practices, they don't do something like that. It's just pretty heavy austerity. You know, the European Christian monks, they would just take a vow to eat unsalted bread and soup. And, you know, sometimes their prayers are somewhat pretty, but they don't have parties. Just, oh, you know, amen. It's not a party. Some people do.
Gospel singers.
Oh, the gospel singers. Yeah, like the black gospel singers. They don't usually dance in their churches. Before I was really sure that I wanted to move into the Hare Krishna temple when I was at university, I was visiting a lot of different churches and temples and things like that. And I went to a black gospel. And they're clapping and they're singing, but they're not dancing. It's very rare that they're dancing. I mean, most materialistic people will only sing and dance if they're intoxicated. Especially on the street. So how kind the holy name is. That I mean, the Krishna has come in a form that's just like a party. Just like a party. We have pretty wild parties in our kirtans, don't we? I don't know what you do here, but I mean, I was just in Russia. We're going on for hours and hours and hours, you know, with kirtan. And the holy name is something you can do. You can access Krishna in a group or very privately. And it can be a very, very deep, deep way of connecting with the Lord. But you can start just appreciating the sun and the moon and the water and the space and air and food. And start with that. You know? If you can also appreciate Krishna's Nam Guna Rupa Lila, that's very nice. Any other questions? Yes.
Thanks for the lecture. And I was just thinking, like you said, like if somebody says to me some suggestion or something, like how should I take as a critic or like as a suggestion? Like for example, what I was like when I was hearing to some person, he said something which is completely opposite to my understanding. So at that time, should I raise my voice and ask his?
I think it's impossible to answer that in a general way. I really do. I think you have to look at you, that person, what is your relationship, what is the topic, how are they presenting it. I don't think you can answer that question out of context. I will say, though, that many reasons that we react in a very bitter and angry way to suggestions or criticism is that our hunger for appreciation is not being met. If we are satisfied in our relationship with Krishna, then we're much better able to deal with negativity from other people. That probably 90-95% of the time, the reason we feel hurt and angry and upset and defensive when other people put something negative on us is that I'm starving. If I'm starving, you know, if you're very, very hungry, you don't have much patience. And especially if you're starving for appreciation and someone gives you criticism, it's even more difficult.
It's like eating chilies on empty stomach.
Yes, thank you. I like that. That was really good. Oh, he's clever. Thank you, yes. And if you realize this, then you don't get so angry at the other person. You realize the real problem here is that I'm starving. If I was satisfied, it really wouldn't make that much difference. If I know that Krishna loves me and Krishna appreciates me and Krishna is grateful for what I'm doing, what do I care if this person appreciates me or not? It doesn't matter. I don't need it. I'm already full. If I'm full, then what does it matter to me if you offer me food or not? It doesn't matter. And then I'm much more able to listen to you with an open mind, and I'm much in a much better position to decide on the intelligence platform rather than the emotional platform how to react to you. The reason I react emotionally is I'm starving. So we have to just... It's not selfishness to breathe. It's not selfishness to meet my spiritual needs. It's not selfish. It's just like, how many of you here have ever been on an airplane? How many of you have ever been on an airplane? Okay, that's pretty good. So, you know, they have this announcement about the oxygen masks. What do they say with the oxygen masks?
First put it on yourself.
Why? Why do they say?
You don't have yourself, you cannot have anyone.
Exactly. If I don't have air, then I try to put the mask on my child. We both die. So you cannot really behave properly if your own spiritual needs are not met. You just can't. Then you're behaving with everybody on a false platform. Then you're trying to exploit others. It just doesn't work. So I have to get, just like I was saying this morning, that my father asked Prabhupada, will loving her child help her to love Krishna? Prabhupada said, no, loving Krishna will help her to love her child. If my relationship is right with Krishna, then I know how to act properly with other living beings because I'm not exploiting them. If I'm starving for appreciation, then I'm trying to get it from you. And if you don't give it to me, I become angry at you. Why should you give it to me? Why am I looking for it from you? I meant to have that in my relationship with Krishna, then I'm full. Whether you give it to me or not, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But you can only get it from Krishna when you're giving it. You have to give first. Actually, Krishna's already appreciating us. We can't feel it. We've closed the door.
So sometimes there are situations where one is in a position to manage something or to act like authority.
That we'll discuss tomorrow. When is it appropriate to criticize? That was you asking.
I mean, it's a very thin line, you know.
It is. We'll discuss that tomorrow. One of the, as far as appreciation, managers should be regularly appreciating the people that they're managing. If you regularly appreciate the people that you're managing, it'll be much easier to manage them. And when you do have to give criticism, they'll be much better able to take it. They'll have a lot more respect for you. That's just material management. Do you know I have degrees in management?
Sorry?
Do you know that I have degrees in management? I have an MSA instead of an MBA, so I have a Master of School Administration, and my PhD is in Educational Leadership. So I've done, and my specific doctoral thesis was in job satisfaction. And I was particularly looking at job satisfaction of Hare Krishna devotees. That was my study.
But I think it's a wonderful study, I would say.
Well, thank you. Not that many devotees have asked to read it. But anyway, one of the main elements of job satisfaction is recognition. So if you're a manager and you show appreciation, as we're talking about, not just, oh, you're doing a good job, but very specific appreciation for people, they'll be much happier in their jobs. They'll have a much better relationship with you. They'll have good reasons to believe that you know something about them and that you genuinely care about them. And then when you give criticism, they'll be much more likely to take it in a proper mood. So it's the value of, you know, even if you just want to manipulate people, the value of giving appreciation is very great. And you really can't appreciate this way in a manipulative manner. It just doesn't work. It's impossible. If you really start noticing what people do, you start genuinely appreciating them. Even if you start out thinking, well, I'm just going to do this to manipulate people, and I'm just going to do this so people will work harder, and I'm just going to do this so I'll get some good karma back. Even if you start out having that motive, it will so quickly turn into the real thing. It's just inevitable. You know, just like when I was saying this to him about washing the floor. I mean, honestly, this morning I didn't think about it in that much depth. But when I was thinking about it now, I'm thinking, that's really amazing. The sacrifice that he's making to keep the temple clean is pretty astonishing. And it's probably even more astonishing because it's the kind of sacrifice that is most likely not noticed. It's the sort of thing one takes for granted. If the floors are clean, the floors are clean. Of course, they're clean. They're supposed to be clean. If they're dirty, you notice them. If they're clean, you don't notice them. And he's intentionally doing it at a time when people aren't walking around. That means people are not likely to see that he's doing it. People are likely they're not in the building or they're all in the temple room. And then even the people who are seeing it are most likely just going to think, well, yeah, of course he's doing it. That's his job. He's supposed to do his job. That's his service. He lives here. That's how he gets his khichdi. He does his job. Right? And how often are we going to really think, well, what is doing that job mean? What does it actually mean? What does he have to do in order to do that job? What are the sacrifices that he's making? And then you automatically see it in a different light. Okay. Yes, sir.
Is prayer austerity also a type of appreciation?
Prayer?
Yeah, a prayer I do to somebody or some person.
It certainly should be. If you read the prayers in the scripture, you'll find that they're full of appreciation for Krishna.
Right, so, I mean, is it just that that appreciation can be to Krishna or some lesser authorities or some other person or guru or anybody in general?
We should appreciate everybody. We should appreciate. This is what's described in the spiritual world. Every single living being is appreciative of every other living being. We should appreciate even the most evil and horrible person. You say, how do you do that? You can find the good motive behind the motive. Just somebody was talking to me about this the other day. Krishna also says, I am death. So somebody who's very interested in killing, and he's also looking for Krishna. He's looking for Krishna. He's looking for Krishna in a foolish way, but he's also looking for Krishna. That I can appreciate. Here's someone who's looking for Krishna. Yes.
I just feeling that sometimes, devotees appreciate something, but then I immediately get proud. Because they appreciated, then I try to do it. The original intention was pure. Before everybody gets unnoticed, like you do it.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that your motive is only pure if nobody notices you. I don't believe that.
Then the motive changes, like to impress somebody else, not really doing the job. But then
you should be trying to impress somebody. You should definitely be trying to impress somebody. Prabhupada says that if you're not trying to impress a particular person by what you're doing, then your whole life is condemned. Who are you supposed to be impressing?
Krishna.
Prabhupada says we should want to be recognized by Krishna, or else our life is condemned. We should want Krishna to notice us. We need that. We actually need it. It's not just a frill. He said, if you're not working to be recognized by Krishna, your life is condemned. Don't try to say, I don't care if anybody notices me. Impossible. Cannot maintain that. That's not our nature. That's impersonalism. I'm going to stop my desires. I'm going to stop my needs. We have a natural desire to be noticed. I'm going to talk about this a little bit more tomorrow morning in the class. But I want Krishna to notice me. And if Krishna notices me, it doesn't matter whether anybody else notices me or not. And if you feel proud, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, if you feel proud, then just chant Hare Krishna. Actually, there were two persons who asked about this. Lord Brahma asked about this, and the leper Vasudeva asked about this question. To the leper Vasudeva, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, just keep chanting Hare Krishna and you'll never become proud. And to Lord Brahma, Krishna said, you just always remember you're my servant. Whatever abilities I have, Krishna's giving that to me. It's not mine. How can I be proud of something that's not mine? But I should feel grateful. If someone appreciates what I do, I should feel so grateful to Krishna. Then I appreciate Krishna. Krishna, thank you so much for sending someone who appreciated the little service I'm trying to do for you. And then I appreciate the other person. Thank you for noticing. I may not say that, but that's what I'm feeling. I feel so grateful. Somebody noticed what I'm doing. How kind, how compassionate, how loving they are. How kind my Lord is that he sent someone to appreciate my very little service. I'm doing such little service, but he notices me. He cares. How wonderful he is. I'm just a little speck. This whole universe is just one little speck. The whole universe to the Lord is just a mustard seed. Then what to speak of one planet in the universe? To the residents of the other planets, this whole earth is just a little dot of light in the sky. So it's a dot within a dot. And then on this planet, Munich is a tiny dot. And in Munich, this house is a tiny dot. And in this house, I'm one of so many people. I'm a dot within a dot within a dot. You know? And still Krishna notices me. He cares. How kind he is. And I'm a criminal. I rejected him. My service is full of so much contamination. My service is full of just desire for reputation or kitri. And still he notices. And he's grateful. How wonderful he is. Then you won't feel proud. You're welcome.
Difficult to ask this question after such introduction. Anyways, until this is an other side of the coin. Once you try to appreciate somebody, or that you notice that the person becomes more proud.
That's all right. You do the right thing. Don't withhold appreciation of others because you think it might make them proud.
It's your responsibility as well to see that person.
Don't withhold appreciation of others because you think it might make them proud. Don't do that. Please. It doesn't work like that. Not if you appreciate in the right way. It just doesn't. That's not your concern. Your concern is that I should act like a resident of the spiritual world. If you want to go to the spiritual world, you act like a resident of the spiritual world. You think they're going to let critical people back to Godhead? They wouldn't fit in. Right? Prabhupada says you want to go into the fire, you have to be like fire. You want to go into the water, you have to be like water. You want to associate with the pure, you have to be pure. Now, we'll talk tomorrow about if I'm an authority, it may be my duty to criticize and to correct. But still, I should always appreciate. People will be much more likely to take your criticism if you're appreciative. They just will. You won't, first of all, it's not any of our positions to cut down someone else's pride. That's Krishna's job, not my job. It just isn't my job. Why do you think that appreciating somebody will increase their pride? You don't understand what appreciation is. As I said, I didn't bring my PowerPoint, but if you look through Prabhupada's letters, you'll see how he's appreciating the devotees. And he does it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And he probably is not worried that if I'm appreciating my disciples, they'll become proud. He's not concerned about that. He's not worried about that. You read some of Prabhupada's appreciation, it's all the way up there. And I believe you'll go back to home, back to Godhead by this service. He says some pretty amazing things. It's like saying, if I feed people, they'll be proud. See, people can't function without it. They can't. They can't function without it.
He gives them more than they can eat, they become sick.
It's so unlikely. It's so unlikely that you'll appreciate people too much if you do it in the right way. It's just so unlikely. Never heard of such a thing. To appreciate people in the right way, you have to really take the time to notice what they're doing. How are you going to have the time and energy to notice people so much that you're going to give them more appreciation than they can digest? I don't think it's going to happen. You'll have a hard time just noticing in 20 people something to appreciate every day. To actually notice every single day for 20 people will be very difficult. If you can say something appreciative for each of the 20 persons once a week, that will be incredible. Hardly anybody can do that. The chances you'll overdo it are next to nil. I don't think there's any danger of it. It takes work to really notice what someone's doing, not just notice, but to think about it. What is this person doing? What does that mean? What kind of jagya are they doing? What are they sacrificing? What are they thinking about? What kind of an austerity is it for them? That takes a great deal of thought. You don't have time to do that every 5 minutes for 20 people. You can't do it. I really don't think you have to worry.
It's not a worry.
I don't think it's a reality. And if somebody feels a little proud, Krishna will deal with that. You don't have to worry about it. He's really good at dealing with that. We should do our job and not be so concerned about something that's not our job. Does that make sense?
The last point.
But I haven't seen that it makes people proud. Just I haven't experienced that. The kind of appreciation that makes people proud is general appreciation. You're such a great devotee. You're practically pure. All you think about is serving Prabhupada and Krishna. You've dedicated your whole life. You hear that kind of stuff often enough from enough people, you can become proud. If you hear that kind of thing often enough from enough people, you can become proud. But if I'm just talking facts, how can you become proud? They're just facts. You're just dealing with truth. You don't feel proud. You feel a sense of joy and satisfaction. And
he's recognizing me.
Yeah. It's you're having a reciprocation of love and connection. It's yoga is what you're doing. The kind of so-called appreciation that brings pride is false. It's on the platform of illusion. And it's not very satisfying. Try it. I am not saying that it makes people proud.
Actually, he's doing this every Sunday when there are some birthdays. He's also always praising devotees. <Yeah. laughs> You're not making them proud.
Yes, okay.
Mataji is saying that you're appreciating with details about people when you announce the birthday.
And do people feel proud when they do that?
No. I was very thankful.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it.
Exactly. In fact, I like your point. You feel quite the opposite. You don't feel proud. You feel exactly the opposite. You feel a sense of deep gratitude, isn't it? It's quite the opposite. If people say things to me like, oh, Armila, you're a great speaker, you're a great this, you're a great that, then I can start thinking, oh, yeah, I really am. And then I become proud. But if people just talk specifically about what I do, I don't feel proud. I just feel grateful. And gratitude is a measure, is part of humility. It's a completely different feeling. Completely different. I don't know enough to say too much, but it's like if I said, you know, you've really seen the benefit in how you can preach to these yoga groups, and you've got a lot of criticism for it, and you don't have a whole lot of support for it, and many people are really on your case for it, but it's something that you feel really inspired about. You're seeing that this is an area of preaching that's really It's sort of a gold mine that hasn't been mined, that ISKCON has been preaching to the Indian community all over the world. And, you know, we preach to sort of Western disaffected youth, but we're not really reaching those people who are already somewhat inclined to many of the aspects of our own philosophy, like Ayurveda and yoga and natural foods and vegetarianism, and we're not really reaching those people. Or those people often have a negative view of us. And so you've dedicated yourself at a lot of risk. You know, it's risk, as I said, people finding fault with you. It's made it difficult even for the other service that you're doing. There's been a lot of conflicts in this. And it requires, you know, just to work, to sort of accomplish what you're doing, requires a lot of forming friendships with people in the yoga community. It requires a lot of research, a lot of phone calls, a lot of time doing things on the computer. And that may not even be the kind of work you'd like to do. You know, you may prefer to do something else, but because you're so inspired with that vision, it's something that you've dedicated yourself to at great personal cost. And it's very wonderful to see somebody who says, this is a preaching need, and I'm going to give myself to that need, even though it may be very difficult, and I don't even know if I'm going to be successful. And when I see that, I feel very inspired in my own work, and I feel that I can go ahead in my own work. And I really hope you're successful with that community, because I think it's something that would be very valuable for our preaching. Do you feel proud? Or do you feel grateful? Okay. You actually feel humbled, don't you? Exactly the opposite of pride. You feel humbled. Isn't it? Did you feel proud when I was talking about your clean before?
Actually, when you say, someone says, especially devotees in that, someone says, oh, probably it's so great work, it's so nice, so this, oh, I'm not so good.
Exactly.
I'm nothing at all, one so Krishna, get actually humble.
Yes. Did you feel proud when I was talking about your sacrifice bringing your daughter here? No. No, you just feel happy. You just feel happy. And you feel grateful. Feel like someone's giving you a gift. I had this realization on my 45th birthday when the devotees at the temple where I lived had a big party for me, which I didn't expect at all. And, I mean, the whole community came out for this party. And I realized that when we don't expect anything, then we feel so grateful and so happy when we get something. And that's what humility means. The less I feel I deserve, the more grateful I am for what I get. And I mean, our natural position as a soul is to be connected with Krishna, and through Krishna to be connected with all other living beings. Appreciation is one of the most powerful ways of connecting from one soul to another. Prabhupada said connection of soul to soul via the super soul. There's very few ways that are more powerful than that. It's very rarely done. And it's... of course one can get proud of anything, but that's, you know, it's possible, but it's highly unlikely. It's not our business. It's not our business. But take it, it's highly unlikely. If you appreciate somebody properly, the chances that you will be an agent for that person to become proud are very unlikely. You know, you're talking about 1 in 1,000 that will happen. It will most likely be just the opposite. All right, thank you very much. My energy level is going way down with this cold that I have. I do apologize that I'm trying to serve you to my best capacity with my physical limitations. I wish that I could do more. If I've said anything you don't like, please ignore it and don't worry about it. No problem. And if I've said anything that you find useful, I hope that you will take it on board. Okay? And tomorrow, Krishna willing, we will discuss the critical aspect. I will not be able to go so late tomorrow because I have to leave Saturday morning at 4:30 in the morning, and which means I'm going to have to get up like at 3, 2:30 or 3. So I'm going to need to go to bed early tomorrow night. So I will probably only go from 6:30 to 7:30 tomorrow. But again, thank you. All glories to Prabhupada, who gave us the Bhagavatam that describes the nature of the spiritual world. Thank you.
Mataji, we also want to thank you.